All right, I got my local recording.
Well, I don't. Hold on.
You're cool.
Don't no, you don't have cool. to record anything, Mike.
I don't?
I don't think so.
No, not if we use this. We should. This should be good.
Yeah.
Oh.
He's been recording us talking about whether you were coming back or not for 3 minutes.
Oh, my God. This is going to be riveting. A great podcast.
Yeah. I'm going to spin that off into its own show.
You do have a lot of spinoffs. I appreciate that about you.
I know. So it's I get the sense that it's only funny to me because listeners literally will tweet me like, "I am annoyed that you're doing this."
What?
I don't understand.
People don't like Asterios Kills Kits.
I mean, to me, it's like, "Ooh, you never know what you're going to get on a Monday." But to them, they're like, "We want the thing.
Ugh.
We want to know what we're getting."
You're getting Asterios. I mean, how much more specific do we need to get?
That's what I say, that it's like, look, if you don't like this guy, well, then clearly you're not going to like any of these. You're not listening to the show for the premise.
Okay.
Are you guys ready?
Yeah.
It's been a long road getting from there to here. It's been a long time.
It has been a long time. Welcome to Science Friction, sci-fi comedy game show where comedians earn points for their opinions and how close those opinions are to my opinions. Now look, us nerds, we get set in our ways. We wear the same t-shirt forever. Look, I know these are stereotypes. Oh, by the way, I'm going to seamlessly work in Philip Mottis and Mike Patet, my guests. Hey, guys.
Hi.
Hey, that was one smooth setup and transition.
That's what I'm known for. So what was I saying? Okay, so it's like, look, I know it's a joke, but it's also true that, like, as a nerd, I do only buy new underpants when my old ones get destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. That's not a, like, that happened. It's just like, so I still have underwear from high school. I do.
Are you supposed to replace things that work? Because if it works...
I know, it's like, look, I'm only wearing underwear because society told me to. I don't understand it. Anyway, look, one small hole and I think it's okay. But what do you guys think?
I got a lot of socks with holes in them.
I'm with you on the underpants thing, but I have recently declared a war on the holes socks. A holy sock war.
Oh,
what it is.
Okay.
And I've decided that I would like socks without holes, so I am throwing away socks with holes.
It's a joke with my wife and I. When someone has a hole in their sock, you go, "Oh, you're poor."
That is a pretty good indicator. Or like, if a sock has a patch over the hole,
that's real
paisley or plaid.
Oh my gosh, that's a perfectly good. That's 95% of a good sock. You need to get yourself a patch.
I know.
Oh, this look at this rich asshole with patching material.
Okay, so you guys are with me. You guys are on board. It's like,
you're not wearing a Ziploc bag over your feet. You put patches on your holes.
You know, it's funny because wearing a barrel used to be the way you could tell someone was poor, but now it's like a barrel probably costs like $200.
Oh, God. Yeah. And you're like, if you see somebody wearing a barrel, you're like, that guy's so into craft beer.
Okay, guys. So you get it. You're with me on this. So here's what we decided to do for this episode of Science Friction. We're going to step outside of our comfort zones.
No!
You've all heard of The Expanse. We love The Expanse. Oh, hashtag save The Expanse. Oh, we gotta catch The Expanse. Like, I'm not going to watch The Expanse unless a podcast forces me to.
Uh-huh.
Why don't you give us enough of the details of the premise so that we could lie about watching it? It
takes place in one of those futures where it's like, it takes place in a pan-ethnic 90s future.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, the pan-ethnic future promised to us by The Fifth Element.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like, now I'm speaking French, but now I'm speaking Arabic, and now I'm going to curse in Spanish. And it's like, this seems a little forced, but I do it, but it's, and then you say, well, Creole's a thing. And you're like, okay, well, I know Creole's a thing. but still, let's not... Okay.
Don't you think, like, those type of things, this is very, like, 2018 political world type thing to think about, but especially with the internet and your setup about how we like what we like, I feel like the way that the internet goes, that that guess at the future would be like, oh, everyone will like dip into everybody and they'll all agree to mix their, it's like, no, they'll stay. It's like, I'm speaking this version of English, or I'm speaking this version of French, and that's it.
You're absolutely right. And another weird thing that I've noticed in both The Expanse and in another show I'd like you guys to watch, Altered Carbon, they both take place in a future where, like, the UN has a lot of power. You guys notice that? It's just like, the UN almost went out of business. Ted Turner had to cut the UN a check to keep the lights on. You guys remember when Ted, the WCW guy, you know, Duke Phillips from The Critic? He had to save the United Nations.
Don't you think a lot of these things are, like, for a long while, before maybe we got more politically active or we knew anything about anything, the UN was a nice, like, catch-all to solve a lot of problems. Yes. It was like, oh, well, the United Nations, that sounds so powerful. And now we're like, oh, crap. But they already had this one written out, so like, maybe it turns around for them later.
I have found, by the way, in general, that The Simpsons has always proven to know the future much better than sci-fi shows.
That's very true. Didn't The Simpsons predict Donald Trump's presidency?
Yes! Yes!
Yeah, because, like, there's a, I forget, but there's, like, some clip of The Simpsons where Donald Trump is coming down an escalator waving at people, and then that is exactly how he announced his candidacy.
It's incredible.
Okay. All right, you know what? Let's play our first game, which is Simpsons predicted it? Question mark?
Oh, okay.
Now I'm going to name something. You tell me if The Simpsons did predict it.
Okay.
Number one. Siegfried and Roy being attacked by their own tiger.
Yes, they
Simpsons
did.
Simpsons predicted it, yes.
You guys both get five tickets. You're both right. It was predicted in 1993. It came true in the year 2003. Although, I believe that The Simpsons predicted that the white tiger would maul both Siegfried and Roy.
Sure.
And I think the tiger only mauled Roy.
Mm. Yes. I think they were hedging their bets.
Yeah, so far. So far.
Wait a minute.
Right, so far, as of this broadcast.
Okay. No, you're both right. Look out, Siegfried. If you're listening to this, watch out.
It's like Final Destination. It's still gonna happen.
Okay. Number two. Did The Simpsons predict that autocorrect would suck?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. He had like an eye palm, what was
no,
it called?
No, it's a Newton.
A Newton.
That's right. You're both right. You both get five tickets, but 10 tickets if you can tell me what beat up Martin was.
Eat up Martha.
To. Yeah, you're goddamn right, Phil. It's another 10 tickets. All right.
Eat up
Martha.
College
Martha.
Is paying off.
All right, one more. Did The Simpsons correctly predict that Disney would buy Fox?
No.
Well, I'm going to say yes just to get those points, maybe.
Mike, you're right, because in 1998, there is a shot of the Fox lot, and it is the famous Pico lot that says 20th Century Fox, underneath it, a division of Walt Disney Corporation.
Nice. Damn.
Cut to nearly 20 years and $66.1 billion later. Oh, wow. Apparently, in this episode called When You Dish Upon a Star, Ron Howard pitches a screenplay that Homer wrote to producer Brian Glazer.
Oh, yeah. His best friend's a talking pie.
Wait.
That's
okay,
true.
For 10 tickets, tell me all about this episode, please.
Somehow Homer makes friends with celebrities, and they include Alec Baldwin and his then-wife Kim Basinger and Ron Howard. Ron Howard arguably being the funniest one because he's always like...
He goes to like their beach house or something.
He's at their beach house, and Ron Howard's always in a bathrobe. And then at one point, Alec Baldwin comes out and says like... He's like, what is this doing here? And Homer's like, there's that script that I left lying on your bed. And he keeps pitching it. And then eventually, and like Homer eventually dishes on the celebrities and sells their secrets and they get all upset. And then the best part, in my opinion, is later when the three celebrities are talking about it. It's like, maybe we were a little hard on Homer. And Alec is like, you know, maybe I could do his movie. I mean, if you take out the talking pie, it might make some sense. And Kim Basinger was like, what are you talking about? You can't take out the talking pie. It's like, that's, it's a buddy comedy. And Ron Howard walks in and goes, you got to leave the pie in. The pie's the heart.
Oh, my God. Okay, Mike. Okay, first off, that's 20 tickets because you did such a goddamn good job. So now it's 45 to 20. But Mike.
Yes.
For 20 tickets, can you remember the funniest line from that episode?
Oh, my God. There's no way. All I remember is Ron Howard being overly nice to Homer, which I think is so funny. But that's all I remember.
Yeah, I think Homer is very rude to Ron Howard, even though at this point he's won multiple Oscars.
Yes. He treats him like a kid, but Ron Howard's super nice to him.
Wait a minute. Now, Phil, for 10 tickets, keep me honest on this.
Okay.
Is the line in this episode where Alec Baldwin goes, now I got to go help Mel Gibson move, and he intentionally waited until I was in his plane to ask me?
Oh, shoot. I don't know.
I think that's a different episode where
it's a different episode, too.
Where he hangs out with Mel Gibson.
Yes, exactly. Because Mel Gibson is talking about the Saturday Night Fever guy's airplane.
John Travolta.
Yeah,
did they make that prediction?
What, that John Travolta would get handsy with some men in some showers, but then have like a weird third act where we're kind of like, we like him in The People versus O.J. Simpson. See this Gotti thing.
Did you? I recently watched Get Shorty for the first time in a long while.
Awesome.
Arguably, like the most understated and yet most 90s movie of the 90s, where it's like, it's John Travolta at sort of his peak of post Pulp Fiction popularity. Where it's like, oh, you know, he's the big draw. And, like, the poster is everybody wearing sunglasses. And it's an Elmore Leonard crime novel adaptation. Mm-hmm. Mm. But it's interesting watching him, because he's good in it. Travolta's good in it. But it is interesting watching him now with, you know, the hindsight and thinking, like, boy, there isn't, like, a lot of chemistry here. It's like there's a romance, kind of, but in name only, between him and Rene Russo.
Okay, let's think about this, because I know exactly what you're talking about. In Saturday Night Fever, he's, like, in love with dancing, right?
Yes.
So, like, that's where he can kind of put his emotion. And then later, in the Look Who's Talking triptych, like, his relationship with Kirstie Alley is always strained.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, Kirstie Alley runs to that airplane when he's about to take off. And she's like, you can't fly the plane, there's storms. And he's like, hey, baby, relax. Hey, okay, check out this. Put a rubber hose up your nose, Kirstie Alley. Oh. And then, but remember, she saves his life because there were too many storms.
Oh.
Do you guys not remember
not that much.
Do you guys not remember the emotional climax of Look Who's Talking To?
That's Look Who's Talking To?
I think it was Look Who's Talking T-O-O. Because it was like, is he going to take off in this airplane? And then it's like, no. But we can't afford to have him fly this plane. This goddamn movie. Okay. Look Who's Talking Now. Okay. Mm-hmm. For 50 tickets, let's play a new game called Look Who's Talking Now. Two again?
Currently?
Okay. Currently? Look.
Because Luke is still talking currently now again.
Look, we went from one baby talking to two babies talking to the sitcom baby talk.
Well, wait, you missed the animals.
No, that came later.
Oh, okay.
To the sitcom baby talk, which was pretty much just the plot of Look Who's Talking. It was a sitcom about like a baby to talk. And then Look Who's Talking Now?
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which had the animals. Okay. For 50 tickets, where should the series naturally have gone? And there is a right answer.
I am going to say to their cars.
Oh!
That's pretty good.
Okay, that's a big 25 tickets. Explain why.
Because I was going to say appliances.
God damn it! I don't know which I like
better.
Like
their microwave talking to their dishwasher.
Yeah, right?
All right, so one is pretty much just the Jetsons or the Flintstones, but for now, which is exactly how I pitch it, which is good because the executives would be like, I know the Flintstones, yes, very successful. But talking car, Herbie the Love Bug, car 54, where are you?
Wait, I want to hear one good car line. What does the car say? What's in the trailer of the car? What does the car say in the trailer?
Well, at one point, the talking car, another car, bumps up on it, and it's a woman car, and she says, like, whoa, back it up, buddy, or, you know, something that's like...
Nice bumper.
Nice bumper, yeah.
I like that. Okay, here's another one. Okay, it's third act. They have to rush to the hospital. Mm-hmm. To give birth to a third baby.
Okay.
But that's just like a B plot in the background. It's like, she's pregnant again. But you don't even think it's going to be a big deal.
And the car is a sports car, and it can't hold all this family.
But when the sports car turns right into Sepulveda and sees all this traffic, the car goes, give me a brakes.
Okay, wait. Here's my pitch.
What do you got?
There's a different car. At some point, they get in. It's a stick shift. And when they shift, he goes, whoa!
Oh, my God. He goes, easy on the merchandise.
Yeah.
Easy on the merchandise. That's my car dick.
All right, I think we found that the car has legs.
Yo, the car plot.
Thank you.
Okay. I was going to say that I think it would be kind of cool if they started talking to ghosts.
Oh.
Like if all of a sudden those babies, like, can see the dead and they have to, like, they have to help. And the pets can see the dead, too.
Well, you know what you do is you do it like a Pixar movie where Pixar, like, one of the babies dies right at the beginning.
I have your title.
Oh, my God. Yes.
I have your title. Your title is Look Boo's Talking.
Yep.
Or, alternately, Look Who's Talking Boo.
Right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Look Who's Talking Boo.
Look Boo's Talking Boo. Spook Boo's Talking. Spook Boo's Stalking. Bleh. All right.
Look Who's Haunting.
Oh, that's it.
Oh, that's way better.
Look Who's Haunting.
Actually, I'm sorry. Look Who's Haunting is great. Now we have a Halloween window.
Yeah.
And it's good because now we can counter-program against the hardcore R-rated horror that's coming out on Halloween. It's like, but it's a nice movie for the kids.
Well, and right. any parent who had a kid who died is going to love this movie.
Oh, my God. Oh, good Lord in heaven. Now, look, these two games, which we definitely planned on playing.
Right.
Uh-huh. Did The Simpsons predict it? And Look Who's Talking to Now Again? These are both slam dunk games that we'll be sure to bring back. Uh-huh. But, you know, we did something. We tried. We went outside of our comfort zone and we said, forget just watching episodes of Deep Space Nine over and over. Forget listening to the same Dungeons & Dragons podcast. Forget the comfort food that is sci-fi. Let's step outside of our comfort zones. So we watched three things that all nerds have heard about, but I bet you haven't watched them all. Sci-Fi Channel's The Expanse, Netflix's Lost in Space, and Netflix's Altered Carbon.
It was like a book report.
Exactly. It's funny. We gave ourselves homework, and our homework was to watch TV. And I felt so proud of myself, too. Like, my girlfriend's like, what are you doing today? Did you look for a job? And I'm like, better. I watched Thomas Jane in Altered Carbon. That's great. Why don't we start with The Expanse?
Okay.
For those who don't know, The Expanse takes place in a future where Earth is under the control of the United Nations. Mars has become some sort of military independent dictatorship kind of thing. I don't know if it's a dictatorship, but, like, there's been a revolution and Mars is now an independent military power. And there's also a vast asteroid belt where water is mined, big chunks of ice. And so we've got three factions, the Earthers, the Marsers, and the Belters, people who live in the asteroid belt. The asteroid belt, as is typical in science fiction, like, anytime there's off-world colonies, like, everyone who lives there is poor and about to die. Everyone on Earth is doing super cool, and I only watched one episode, so I haven't seen Mars yet. But I'm assuming Mars is, like, somewhere in between.
Hippies.
What?
Hippies, probably.
Yeah, exactly. Smoking their Mars dust getting their red on or something. There's always something. Wait a minute. No, new game. Who can name the getting high on sci-fi?
Ooh.
That's the name of this game.
Uh-huh. Okay.
For 25 tickets, name your favorite fictional sci-fi drug. For example, the two that come to mind right away are A, dust from Babylon 5, which you smoke and then it gives you psychic powers. But sometimes the psychic powers drive you crazy. And then the PsyCorps has to come in and be like, these crazy dust heads. They went crazy and killed a bunch of people. Like, it was dusters. But then two, tech from the William Shatner series Tech War, which is like a little microchip that you put in the back of your head. And it makes your hallucinations realer than real, but it's bad for some reason. It's illegal.
I would say mine is Nuke from RoboCop.
Yes, that's a big 50 tickets to Mike Patel. I love it.
Wait, which one? What's Nuke from?
I think it goes right in your neck too, don't you? Like like a needle that just goes in your neck. It's so over the top.
And don't forget, where do you buy Nuke? From a 12-year-old drug dealer. That's who. A 12-year-old drug kingpin. A terrifying vision of the future from screenwriter Frank Miller. You know, the guy who, like, writes Batman beating up Muslims now?
Does he really?
Yeah, sorry. Look, he was a fascist back then.
Yeah,
it was
just
entertaining fascism. Yeah.
Taking a cue from Batman... Yes. My favorite fictional drugs are from Batman Beyond.
Excellent.
And they are, they had that sort of like late 90s thing of like, it's like what you know, but we gave it a hip name.
Yes.
I think they were called Slappers.
Yes.
And it was basically steroids. They were like squares that you put on your body and they'd make you super strong and be able to punch through walls and stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay.
So I like that. That you could easily just carry it in your pocket, juice up, be done, kick some ass, set.
Phil, you're getting 40 points for that, for Slappers.
Yes!
Very good. Now, Phil.
Yeah?
I'll give you 15 points if I correctly guess how this episode ended.
Okay.
Let me guess. So, Batman Beyond, a.k.a., what is his name, like Terry McGillicuddy?
Terry McGinnis.
I like McGillicuddy better. I'm going to call him Terry McGillicuddy. Okay, Terry McGinnis is fighting a guy, and he keeps putting on, like, slappers. And he's like, you can't stop me. I got you move for move. All your training is useless to the shortcut I've taken of drugs. And then Terry gets a hold of the pouch of slappers and then slaps them all on the guy. And he's like, this is great. I love it. More strength. Exactly what I needed. You're making a big mistake giving me all these slappers. Oh, no. It's too many slappers. No. And then in the movie, he would explode. But on the cartoon, I'm guessing he just falls unconscious.
You are not far off.
God damn it!
I believe you're very close. It is an overdose that gets him, but it's like something to do with the overdose. It's established earlier in the episode that like if you do it too much, it's like your brain can't handle it. So the guy is like a vegetable.
Oh,
by the end,
that's pretty good because you can't kill him because it's a cartoon. But it's like
right,
but that's kind of worse than death.
It's worse than death.
Like, if you're a kid, you're like, oh, my God, I'll never smoke pot again. I'll become much like that slap head that Terry McGinnis beat up. Slappers. That's fucking terrible. Okay.
It is kind of
very good. Very good job to you both. We're going to take a small break, but the scores are, at the end of round three, Philip has 125 tickets, Mike has 105 tickets, and we'll be back right after this.
You think you know Batman? Go beyond.
Batman.
To the future in a whole new Gotham City where evil is no joke and Batman is beyond anything you've seen before. With fresh new suits and kicking new gear, the future knight has a hidden new power. Now he flies and kicks that clown into tomorrow. This is Lightning Storm. Now evil is mocked, rocked, and shot. You think you know Batman? Now he's younger, he's faster, he's cooler, he's you. I am Batman. Beyond. Each sold separately. Go Beyond. Batman Beyond.
Okay. It's welcome back to Science Friction's book report episode. No. Wait. Hold on. I got to come up with like a sci-fi term for it. Like status report. Or
Captain's Log report?
Captain's... Watch it. Watch. Hey there, watch it. All right, that's good enough. All right, hold on. And three, two, one. Welcome back to Science Friction. Now we're going to play a game called Hey, Watch It, Buddy, where we pitch shows that we think you should watch or maybe shouldn't. Look, we've watched the shows because it's hard. How are you going to watch everything? How are you going to watch, oh, I'm going to watch The Expanse. Oh, I'm going to watch all of Caprica. Oh, look, I'm going to watch all of Discovery. It's like there's too many choices. Now there's a 900th Doctor Who. I'm going to watch all of it. No. So we've each picked a new show that we're going to tell you about. We watched it, so you don't have to, but I don't know. What if we like it? Then you should maybe watch it. Now, Phil, you watched Lost in Space on Netflix. Why did you pick Lost in Space?
It was available to me easily. I guess there was a minor... I missed it when it first originally came out. Well, when this version came out. I never watched the old version. I didn't watch the movie with Matt LeBlanc and all that stuff. But I know when this Netflix show first started, there was a lot of hubbub about the robot.
Yeah.
Specifically about the robot being sexy.
What? That I didn't hear.
So everybody can look this up if that is possible to go back in time on the internet. But there was a hot minute there for a couple weeks where people were posting pictures of the robot from its back and saying, this butt on this robot is incredible. And people
I'm
would
Googling
talk about it.
Sexy Lost in Space robot.
And if you don't mind me saying, literally the first thing that came up is headline, sexiest bot ever, colon, everyone's hot for the robot in Lost in Space. And that's from sci-fi.com.
There you go.
So it ain't sexy.
So here's the thing. If you're, everybody live your life and do what you want. You can like what you want to like. But if you are after lots of sexy robot, you will have to wait until at least episode 2. Because a lot of episode 1 is filled with the setup to actually get to that robot. The robot isn't even like one piece in the first episode. So they delay, like any good sexual tease, they delay that payoff until later.
Is there a voice for the robot?
I didn't recognize a celebrity voice. It did get to say Danger Will Robinson, the only thing anybody knows from Lost in Space, eventually. The premise of this is that in the future, I guess Earth isn't doing so hot, and they've sort of tested people to qualify for getting on a mission to basically colonize another planet. And this family, the Robinson family, has all somehow qualified by one way or another. Some of them did so by actual qualifications. The youngest kid wasn't going to make it, and so somehow the mom like bought his way on. But as they're flying through, they're like all of humanity that is making this mission is on a big ship, that there is an incident and, there's emergencies and ships are lost and the Robinsons get waylaid and lost on planet is really what they are. They're not necessarily lost.
Hey, Phillips, space. Does the robot get waylaid? Sorry.
Can I give tickets?
I was literally just giving him 20 tickets. I was opening
69
up
tickets to Mike. No, the robot, I believe is, if memory serves, it's sort of hostile to humans, but because the kid is nice to it and helps it like rebuild itself, it's not just a robot. It's also sort of an alien being, so it has its own mind and such. There's also like a possibility that the husband and wife are getting divorced, which is just feels like kind of small potatoes considering the world's ending.
Yeah.
You know, I know we all got problems. And it's, and sure, it's relatable and human, but your kid is also trapped in ice. Could you put aside your problems for one freaking minute?
So, did you like it?
I found it interesting, and then not for nothing, it was like they knew what they were doing enough to package. It was like they delivered that pilot in such a way that it works for you to watch, want to watch the next one. And one of the biggest ones of that is I didn't know that they got Parker Posey to play Dr. Smith, who's from the old show and is sort of an antagonist villain. Although they did in this new update, because it's all dark and stuff, it's closer to... and Asterios, you're going to have to help me out. In Battlestar Galactica, who was the... It was like the villain that nobody knew was a villain. What's
Gaius
his name? Gaius Baltar. She's more along the line of Gaius Baltar, where people think she's all right, but she might be like a psychopath who kills people, and she's impersonating a doctor or something, but now she's with this family.
And she's like, she's clearly self-interested, but much like Baltar after the robot apocalypse, it was like, well, it's also in his interest to help the humans.
Right.
It's like, it's in Dr. Smith's interest to help the space family Robinson.
Right.
Even though it's like, she's also self-interested.
Right. So did I like it? It was all right. It's kind of not so hot in parts too. It's like the acting is not so good. Parker Posey, I thought, was actually pretty great because she's just a performer more than any of the others.
Because she's surrounded by garbage.
She's surrounded by garbage and sexy robots.
But how about this, though? Okay, because I also watched Lost in Space, and I was like, you know what? This isn't for me. I think I know who it's for. I think it's for parents to watch with their kids.
Yes.
Because so much of the episode is focused on, like, these kids and these kids getting into problems. And it's like, well, for us, divorce is kind of like, that's small potatoes. But to, like, a kid, divorce is like the end of the goddamn world. Mm. And it has, like, and there's definitely, like, a scene where, like, this little kid is like, I'm going to go jump in the ship and save us. And the dad's like, don't do that. And the kid's like, I'm definitely doing it and it'll be great. And like, as he like jumps underwater. And then as a kid, if you're watching this, you're like, yeah, fuck you, mom and dad. Like, how dare you try to safeguard my life and stop me from getting swat. And look, it definitely turns out terribly for that girl. She almost dies frozen in ice. But for that one moment of rebellion, I loved it. I was totally on her side.
I liked how So yeah, a girl gets trapped in ice. One of the family gets trapped in ice. And there's parts where they're not digging. Like, it happens. She gets trapped. Boom, she's trapped. I don't know how ice works, or is it space ice, that suddenly it's frozen 6 feet deep? Like, I've never seen ice do that. And I felt like you really should have been hammering at that ice and that water at the beginning.
I
would have got trapped, too.
Would you call this show like a sci-fi starter show?
Ooh.
Sure.
I think so.
Yeah. It's I don't know how much science fiction, you know, it's closer to like a fantasy adventure than, you know, they're not asking some tricky questions of like, is it amoral for me to marry that robot even though he's so fit and taut and beautiful? You know, they're not asking those things. It's more like it's a science fiction-y background with adventure elements. So yeah, starter show. That's good.
Here's what I think you should do. Let's say your kid wants to watch Cars for the 50th time. You're just like, what if we tried to watch this new show that all the kids like called Lost in Space? Because it's you can be cleaning while it's on. And it's fine. You could be folding clothes. You could be organizing receipts. And then your kid is watching. And then every 10 seconds, you turn your head and, like, there's some pretty good-looking spaceships.
Yeah.
They clearly spent some goddamn money on this show.
But you're right. It is not made to be, like, some sort of awards contender game changer of television. It is, like, they made a show to occupy space. No pun intended. It was like, you know, we need product for the TV to have on.
Yes.
You could have this on while you're doing your things. Put this on.
All right, Mike.
Yeah.
You watched Altered Carbon, another Netflix original?
I sure did.
Tell us all about it.
Well, it made me want to claw my eyes out.
Oh, my God.
I hated it.
Wow.
So, I don't know why I started with that. I should have started with the plot, I guess.
No, you're cool, man.
Or you can just stop.
Yeah. Don't watch Altered Carbon.
So, this is a show, and maybe I'm just dumb, which is definitely a possibility, but it's not a show where you can just have it on in the background, at least not the pilot.
Mm-mm.
I was like, wait, what? A lot of the time. So what happens is in this show is you're kind of like cutting back and forth, but there's this guy, Takeshi Kovacs, and he gets murdered trying to kill other people or something like that. And then meanwhile, you see this other dude who's this like really like overly good looking white guy. And then you realize it's the same dude. They took his brain out and put him in a new, what they call sleeve, which is his new body. And then that sleeve got bought by this rich old lady. And then he has to solve the murder of Asterios, help me out. The lady?
No, the dude.
The guy. The guy who lives with the lady. It's kind of like, so he had been backing his brain up all the time except for this 120 minutes.
Oh, come on.
Yep, exactly. It's like a Google spreadsheet where you're like, oh, it didn't save that one old draft that I needed to save.
Mm-hmm.
And so then this dude needs to figure out what happened in that 20 minutes and solve this murder. But the whole thing has this feel for me like, oh, this was like a romance novelist who's now writing like future stuff. I don't know. It felt really weird, and it felt like people were like about to say like, "Hand me my e-gun," stuff like that. I was like, "Oh boy!" Like sleeves and all that sounded so cheesy, and the exposition is so over the top.
Give us an example of over the top exposition.
So. They talk about the like how your brain gets like re-upped, and this like woman's teaching a class to these new sleeves, and it's just like, so then you take the chip and put it in your neck, and your brain is your old self, but your body is your new self, and we're like, yeah, we get that. It just felt so like,
And we don't use the term new bodies; we say sleeves.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. But it did feel, the biggest thing for me that felt really strange was that you had this cool Asian character that is now a white guy who's more powerful.
Oh.
I was like, what a weird thing to say. I don't know. Asterios, did you feel that at all? Or was that just me?
No, I definitely, let's start with the last thing you said. All right, so it's opening up and there's like a cool Asian guy and he's killing evil mobsters, and he's sleeping with a hot lady.
Yeah.
And there's all this cool stuff. And I'm like, oh, neat. I'm going to be watching like an expensive sci-fi show with an Asian lead.
Yeah.
And it's not that he's like a kung fu master or a computer hacker.
He's
like,
just
so happens. He's like Asian. And then, yes, I was immediately disappointed when in the next scene we see him and it's like, we took the Asian guy's brain and put it in a white guy. Now,
yeah.
I get that they're probably justifying it by saying, but isn't this always what we do in fiction? Like, we take an Asian character, we put a white guy's face on it. This is a commentary on it.
It did not feel like a commentary.
Well, but here's the thing. That's what the producers are saying to help themselves sleep at
really?
Night. Really? Yeah. I mean, I don't know that for a fact, but but I'm just guessing that up, that they're just like, we're saying something. And it's like, no, you just wanted, it's like you wanted Thomas Jane. That is Thomas Jane, right? No, it's Joel Kinnaman. Who the hell is Joel Kinnaman?
I don't know.
Joel Kinnaman. He's a Swedish guy. He was in House of Cards, The Killing. Oh God, I'm going to cut all this stuff because it's not Thomas Jane. I don't care.
But, no, Thomas Jane was in The Expanse.
That's he was in The Expanse, yes, because he's really good in The Expanse.
Okay.
Okay, but anyway, I liked it because unlike The Expanse or Lost in Space, which I also watched this week, at least I could understand the premise of Altered Carbon.
Mm-hmm.
The premise is a rich guy wants his own murder solved.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of cool. He's like, I'll break you out of jail, I'll give you a million billion UN space credits. All you got to do is solve my murder. And it's like, okay, that's kind of neat. And also, we are closer.
But there's so much stuff about, like, I don't want to take the case. I don't care.
Yeah, that's true.
And it felt really like, oh boy, just get to it.
And then
make a different choice.
And then in the end, when he does take the case, it's very unearned.
Yeah.
Where he's like, tell him I'll take the case. And it's like, why? Well, because you got shot and almost died? Like, why do you care? If anything, this would make me want to kill myself even more. The fact that, like, I was attacked by a bunch of Russian mobsters in Edgar Allan Poe's virtual brothel, which,
yes.
Phil, does happen.
Yes, it does.
Wow, really? So,
yeah, there's, like, a sex hotel called The Raven.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's
pretty. Which they make a big deal about, like, wow, they've never had a customer in however, you know, 50 years or something stupid. But the place is beautiful.
I know.
And really well kept up. And that was confusing to me.
Yeah, no, it was weird. And it's like the chain guns in the ceiling worked perfectly after 50 years of not being oiled or waxed or shined up.
And he's been waiting 50 years to use them.
Yeah. The whole time I'm watching Edgar Allan Poe, I'm just like, I wish this was Paul F. Tompkins.
That would have been great.
The guy even looks kind of like Paul. It looks like they were literally casting for a Paul F. Tompkins type.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, one of the reasons I liked Altered Carbon is that I feel like it's like the singularity might be a thing that we have to deal with because technology's moving so fast, you know, we can already like, you know, like even 10 years ago, they're like, we saved a rat's memory to a floppy disk.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you did what to a rat? And it's like, well, hey, how do you know?
Well, that's so if you though, so, okay. So in the show, there were like in the background parts where like they walked out and there were people protesting and, you know, about like, you know, let people die or don't reuse brains or something like that.
I thought that was dumb.
Dumb?
Did you like that? Because I thought that was stupid.
No, but I was like, I thought that was, well, I guess I thought that was like, I want that to be bigger in the show.
That's
right?
True. Yes, because Phil, in the future, like, space Catholics are like, no bringing people back to life, no putting someone's brain in another person's body, or their soul goes to hell.
Yeah. It just, you know, felt like abortion, dumb that that was just abortion. Such a background thing.
Yeah, that's true, because there's one scene of it where it's, and it's you can so tell this is like a made for Netflix show because when you walk out into that protest, there's like 8 protesters. They go like, no, stop bringing people back to life. Stop bringing people. And like, they just shoot them from a bunch of different angles. And then the other way you can tell it's a Netflix show is there's a 10-minute conversation in a car where it's like, this is like a fifth of your runtime. You guys know that, right? You're just in this. But then every once in a while, like, you look at the window and it's like, oh, there's clouds out that window.
It's like, okay. Well, they also had a scene at a strip club, didn't they?
Yes, there's a whole, yeah.
Where it's like, what do you do? Why do you need this? Like,
there is a scene in a strip club, but again, very Netflix. It's like, you kind of only see one small table with one girl and then the two people are at the table drinking and it's like there's no like wide shot of this strip club.
Yeah.
Robot dancing?
No, but there is like a virtual lady who's like, I'll become anything you want.
Mm.
And it's like I've seen this a billion times.
Right?
Yeah, just the whole thing, in the writer in me, I was like, just make a different choice. Every choice felt like the obvious, cheesy, like, yep. Like, okay, I know what's going to happen, or I know he's going to change his mind. And
the strip club, like, the strip club is to lower budget TV shows as the, like, abandoned amusement park is to Scooby-Doo villains.
Yes.
You know, like, yes. Oh, I bet they're hanging out. Yep, there we go. Going to the same place.
Because, okay, so like, here's what a strip club is like in budgetary terms. It's like, all right, you pay an extra $150 and you just say no nudity. We're only going to see your back. So, you know, it's like, and then it's a fog machine, and the fog machine is 80% of the set. Where it's like, you can't see it. There's a reason it's so dark. It's like, is the reason because you can't afford a lot of lights? Or because you can't afford a lot of strip clubs? You're like, no, it's dark and seedy. Just like a protagonist state of mind. Yeah, this is a two-wall strip club. I'm not kidding. I was thinking to myself, like, they shot this in the corner of the studio, didn't they?
Yeah. By the way, so Asterios, one other thing. So this guy who is awakened after his death,
yes.
He is awakened 250 years
yes.
after he died.
Yes.
And how is he not the whole time, or at least even one scene, when he walks out being like, holy shit, this is weird. I feel like I never saw him do that. Did he?
No, he definitely didn't. Like, he asked what year it is, and then he asked what planet he's on. He goes like, what planet am I on, dipshit? And they're like, you're on Earth. And he's like, all right, I'll stop killing all the people in this body resuscitation facility.
Yeah, right,
That I'm in. I think Altered Carbon does have a bunch of shitty tropes, but I liked how straightforward it was. Mm. And I think that the mystery is interesting because, like, so here's what happened. Like, there's a safe. The only people that can open the safe are this billionaire and his wife. The gun in that safe was used to shoot the billionaire in the head. Now, the billionaire has an off... And also, his brain chip was destroyed. But the billionaire has, like, a floating off-satellite backup of himself that was also hacked into. And the only person that knows about that satellite are the billionaire and his wife. And the wife's taking the polygraph, and the wife is innocent, and the billionaire is like, I would have no reason to kill myself, and if I did kill myself, I would do a much better job of it. I'm very competent at killing myself if I want to. So it's like this kind of Sherlock Holmes in the future thing where this dude has to, like, I just think that's an interesting puzzle, and I would like to know the solution. Now, I might just want to read the solution online and not watch 13 episodes, but I was like, I got to hand it to you, Altered Carbon. This is a pretty good mystery. Whereas the mystery in Lost in Space is like, why did their ship get all fucked? Why are they lost in space? Why are these robots attacking them? Or in the show I watched, Sci-Fi Channel's The Expanse, there's a thing where it's like, there's a girl and she's been kidnapped. Who kidnapped her and why? Like, was it Mars? Was it Earth? And I'm just like, I don't care who kidnapped this girl. Like, I could give two shits who kidnapped her. So at least with Altered Carbon, there was a good. I thought what did you think of the mystery, Mike? Were you just like bored of it?
I was. I'm always more character based than plot based in general. Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I am the guy who, I'm like, I don't care, like, to read the ending of a movie before I go see it. I like doing that. So I could just, like, watch how they get there.
I'm that exact same way.
You are?
It's true.
Yeah.
I sat on a plane with Mike in, I think, 2002. He had gotten a copy of Kill Bill before it came out. And it drove me and my wife crazy because we're like, we don't want to know, but he's just sitting there reading it, and you closed it, and you're like, it's awesome.
So just to close up, I'll tell you guys about The Expanse. So The Expanse...
Sell us.
...takes place in a future where there's three... actually, here's how you know that you're either going to love or hate The Expanse. It opens up with, like, a 9-title crawl that tells you a bunch of exposition. Like, the first thing it says is, like, the UN is taking control of Earth. Mars is an independent military body. And the poor mine for ice in the asteroid belt. They're called belters. And it's like, but these three factions are all fighting, and all it takes is one spark, and there'll be war between the Belters and the Earthers and Mars. And all that is on a black screen delivered in white text.
By the way, can I just say how hard it is to create terms for sci-fi that don't sound so incredibly stupid?
I mean, you're right. Between slappers and Belters and Earthers.
It's hard.
Nukeheads? I mean, weren't they called nukeheads in that goddamn movie?
I think so.
You got nuke on the brain, kid. Anyway, and so, like, first off, I like that they just didn't even try to come up with a clever way to get all this exposition out. Like, they didn't even go to the trouble of making, like, a news story opening where they're like, on the 50th year of the Asteroid Belt Independence. You know, like, we celebrate these three factions. Now we'll hear the president of Earth, and this is a guy from Mars. It's like, no, they just fucking, it's Star Wars style, front-loaded exposition. Then Thomas Jane plays like a physically challenged, morally ambiguous detective.
Wait, what do you mean physically challenged?
His, like, his spine is fucked up because he was born in outer space, and when the human body is born in outer space, like, because the human body expects a certain amount of gravity, like, if it doesn't get it, you become what is called long boned, which is like you develop long bird like brittle bones.
Hey Philip, did your robot from Lost in Space get long boned?
Often.
Okay, thank you.
that's another 20 tickets. And so he's been put in charge of finding a missing rich executive's daughter who's been kidnapped. And, meanwhile, on the asteroid belt, this, like, crew is looking for ice, and they get an SOS, and it's from the missing girl, but there's, like, zombies on the ship. And then...
Zombies?
I didn't quite understand it. And then... cut back to Earth, and the only older ethnic woman who's in everything. Like, for example, she played Captain Kirk's admiral in the third Star Trek movie. She played a terrorist in 24.
That's her.
She's the only one in the culture. We got one, and it's her. And she plays like a UN interrogator, and she's, like, torturing some guy. And that's... kind of where it ends, and then it's like, what's gonna? Are they gonna find this missing lady? Like, tune in next time. And I'm like, I'm not gonna. I don't care about this missing lady.
So
good luck,
like,
with your
cop,
ice problems.
A space cop drama.
Yeah, it's much like Altered Carbon. It's like using a murder mystery to kind of easily guide us through a complex sci-fi premise,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, which is like the Watchmen trick, which is like, you know, it's just like, this world's complicated, but who's killing these masked heroes? It's like, I could follow that.
Yeah.
So don't watch it. Wait, are all of us going to recommend that no one watch these new things?
Sorry.
It kind of sounds like that. I was going to say, you're the one who watched them all. How would you rank them?
I would rank Altered Carbon as number one because, again, at least it's simple.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some fighting scenes in it, and there's some good, like, shooting scenes. Okay. Where, like, people are shooting each other with, like, future bullets.
Wait, so am I really that dumb? Did you feel like you could have it on in the background and totally get what's happening?
Altered Carbon, no. No.
Okay, good.
I feel like that's the gold standard of what's good.
Yeah, you know, the American Dad rule.
It's a little I didn't think it was 100% simple.
Okay.
Well, Altered Carbon, it's like, they got the singularity, and someone got murdered, and it's like, figure it out. With the Expanse, there's all this geopolitics that I could care less about. Oh, and then also, everyone's really hot, but it's supposed to be like a dark future where everything's fucked up, and I'm like, pass. Oh, in the Expanse, like, people are having sex in zero gravity in, like, scene two, and I'm like, double pass. Like, I know I'm not going to see any of the good stuff. This is on the Sci-Fi Channel, so don't waste my time. And then Lost in Space, I think, is in a special category all its own where, like, it's really only good if you have kids to watch it with. Mm. What do you guys think?
I think you nailed it.
Yeah. I didn't like my show as much as you liked my show.
Yeah, but I'm also not. I only liked it the most out of all three of them.
I'm going to describe. This is my personality. Okay. You know what my favorite sci-fi movie probably is?
What?
Her.
Oh, Her's a great movie.
It's great. But for me, like, that's perfect sci-fi, where it's like, it's future, but man, is it just like the background, and nobody ever tries to, like, you know, talk about sleeves and nuke and shit like that. Like,
well, it's also, that's in particular, that may be an exception that proves the rule, but that's an especially good example of, like, you take an idea that's sort of commenting on what's going on now, or, you know, a relatable idea of us having a relationship with our phone, and then you exaggerate it, and then the great thing that that does, and I think what appealed to you probably, is that he had sex with a phone. That it's about him. It's about a character dealing with human
but, like,
problems.
The way they pulled off, like, sci-fi fashion is, like, they wore just, like, slightly higher-waisted pants.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I was like, that's so fucking perfect.
And had bigger pockets that accommodated the phone. I mean, that all made sense.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, her is great. It sounds wrong to say that way. That movie called Her is great. I remember, like, I felt like one of the best parts is when he tells... Is Chris Pratt in that? He tells Chris Pratt that his girlfriend is, you know, at an operating service. He's like, cool, well, we'll just double. And, like, people just accept it.
Sure.
Because then you get to the other things faster rather than having to dwell on people saying, it was like, what? That's weird. Because, like, we already know it's weird.
Yeah. Well, and they, like, his job is to write, what was it? It was to write letters.
Yeah. For other people.
Yeah. For other people. And it's like, they don't really talk about it. It's just like their job. And I like that.
No. That's a good one, Mike. Everyone should watch Hers on Netflix now. Everyone should just watch Her.
Yeah. I let's just all... Okay, guys. So I think the lesson we all learned is, like, don't step outside of your comfort zone. Like, don't try. Just watch Star Trek The Next Generation again. Just do it. Don't feel guilty. And then if you have a free moment and you don't want to watch a TV series, watch Her, which is great.
You know, it's a good... I don't know if you would call this sci-fi, but The Good Place, is a great new show.
It's pretty close.
Has that
it's close
sci-fi
enough.
Feel.
It's close enough.
Yeah. I dig that.
Okay. Well, guys, I've picked our winner this week.
Ooh.
And our winner between Mike and Phil... is the movie Her, only on Netflix.
Yes!
Watch it now. Very sexy voice. Cool
pants.
I want
that sexy phone to have sex with Phil's sexy robot.
Yeah, Longbone.
Anyway, guys, if you'd like to plug your Twitter and such, this is the perfect time to do it.
I have a Twitter. It's Batette, @Batette, @BETETTE.
You can follow me on Twitter. I'm @PhilipMottaz, PhilipMottaz. And Mike and I have a podcast called Superpunk Radio, where we make up fake commercials. And I'm also a producer of another one called Ramones of the Day, where we are going through every single Ramones song alphabetically from 53rd to the word zero.
Where are you at?
I'm at my house.
No, oh, nice.
You can look it up. You can follow it at Ramones Podcast, and just Google it, and you'll find it on iTunes.
I have been listening to so much Ramones lately.
Really?
I've been listening to End of the Century over and over and over again.
No kidding.
Yeah, I don't know why, but I've been on a real Ramones kick lately.
The album,
yeah,
like the
the whole album, because it's got both. It has both rock and roll. Do you remember Rock and Roll Radio?
Yeah.
And what's the other single off that one?
Rock and Roll High School, yeah. Or Danny Says. Yeah.
Exactly. Which I like Rock and Roll High School and Do You Remember Rock and Roll Radio. It's like two songs about being nostalgic for,
yeah.
for something that I have no idea about, but they're in the same album and I love them both.
Yeah. That album also has two songs that end with explosions.
Excellent.
It's weird.
That was a Phil Spector album, right?
Yes. Yeah. Oh. That's the one. That's the one that broke everybody.
Produced at gunpoint.
Yeah.
Everyone needs to listen to the brand new Ramones album from 1981. End of the century. I think it was 81. But anyway. Oh, yeah?
Yes, I think it was. Oh, wait. 1980. Wait. I think it's 1980.
Ah, goddammit.
I should know.
No, well, you look, okay, you're like, it's not a test.
I'm 150 episodes into this thing. I should know.
Well, yeah, I was asking, what song are you at?
Oh, we are almost up to the surfing block. We are to SU. So the last one was Strength to Endure, and then we're going to get into their cover of The Who's Substitute, and then, seriously, three songs about surfing.
Those Ramones loved surfing.
They loved singing about surfing, I guess. Well, they love covering people who sang about surfing. They loved a lot of stuff.
I think at some point they just loved putting out songs.
Yes.
All right, guys. That's it for us. Listen to me, Asterios Kokodos. You can follow me on Twitter at Asterios. And you can listen to all our podcasts at AsteriosPodcast.com. And, of course, if you want to support the show, you can pledge just $1 to Patreon.com/Asterios and get all these podcasts 4 days early, get early episodes, get early everything. But speaking of early, it's getting late for us boys, and so we're all going to go to bed. Thank you, Phil, and thank you, Mike, so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
All right, and we'll talk to you later. Energize!
Look who's energizing, too.
I will see my dream come alive. I will touch the sky.